deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
As 2024 rounds to an end and people begin to turn their brains off for 10 glorious days, there's one morsel of statistical importance that remains in the heart of the people who work for free expression and access to information in Canada. Access to information from government organizations in Canada and the legislation that protects publicly funded agencies, such as Indigenous Services Canada, all the way to your local municipality, have become more protected and expensive to access this year, according to Canadian Lawyer magazine. This year, according to Globe and Mail's Secret Canada reports, over 176,900 federal requests have been made from the public and journalists for public records, a growing number in a trend of more and more government agencies hiding behind legislation that protects their right to secrecy for various reasons. However, under BC's Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, the public's access to documents can be refused if they're for sale. The law also does not put any restrictions on how much a government or department or agency can charge for access to documents, according to Freedom House, an American organization that exists to advance policies and strengthen democracy as well as protect human rights across the globe. The Canadian Centre for Free Expression has continued to work for the advocacy and education of Canadians to exercise their democratic right to access public information, and December 31st of this year is the deadline for anyone, citizen or journalist, to nominate a government or agency for outstanding secrecy of publicly accessible information. The award deadline for this year is coming up. Do you have like an idea of how many nominations you have this year?
I know we have quite a number.
Yeah. Are they mostly from journalists too?
A number from journalists, because journalists probably do more access to make more access to information requests than any other category of people in Canada.
Yeah.
But there are also requests from members of the public, from civil society organizations that are trying to find out what their city council is doing, or from healthcare coalitions that are trying to find out what the provincial government is doing.
Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. If you're a journalist or maybe even a member of the public, you might have tried to file a Freedom of Information request to a publicly funded agency like the RCMP or even your local municipality. Access to information and the effectiveness of Freedom of Information or FOI laws vary significantly across countries. The Global Right to Information rating, or RTI rating, developed by Access to Europe and the Center for Law and Democracy, assesses access to information worldwide. And according to this rating, countries such as Mexico and Serbia are recognized for having robust access to information laws, whereas Canada falters in that category. Here's Amanda Follett-Hosgood, the Taiyi's Northern BC reporter, explaining her experience just in this last year of requesting FOIs.
2024 was kind of the year of FOI for me. When January began, I was looking at doing three different Freedom of Information inquiries through BC's Office of the Information Commissioner. So for people who don't know how the system works, you file your FOI request to government. They have a certain amount of time to respond to you. And if you have any concerns with their response, or if you don't get a response, you can make a complaint in BC to the OIPC. The OIPC's role is to try to negotiate a solution between the person requesting the information and the public body. And if they can't do that, they will put your request in a line for inquiry. And you can wait up to a year or two for your number to get called and to begin that inquiry process. So starting in January, government lawyers will file their argument, and it can be a, 100 page long legal argument about why they shouldn't have to release the information. You respond to that, they respond to you, and then ultimately the information commissioner makes a decision, and it's a binding decision about whether or not the government has to release that information. So it was a pretty steep learning curve, very time consuming. And I can't say that I got a whole lot of information in the end. I think of the three inquiries that I took part in this year, one of them was a partial win where the government had to release a little bit more information. At this point, it was so old that it was kind of irrelevant and I didn't do much with it. But what I learned, which was interesting, is that through the FOI inquiry process, the government, as it makes its arguments, reveals certain details. So, for example, I learned when I was requesting information that involved with certain land defenders, and the government's argument for not releasing that information was that they realized that they had actually been collecting personal information on these land defenders illegally. And they successfully made that argument, but that little tidbit was in itself kind of an interesting story. Another example was I had FOI'd BC Wildfire Service's wildfire investigation report into the Lytton fire, and they had refused to release it. And again, the OIPC sided with the government, but in making their argument, the Ministry of Forests wrote that the wildfire expert who was analyzing the cause of the fire actually changed his mind at one point throughout his investigation. It's maybe not the transparency that BC residents would expect from their government, but it just goes to show that through perseverance, it may take several years, you might actually learn a little bit about your request, even if it's not the full records that you had hoped for.
Enter James Turk and the Code of Silence Award. This snarky little number is an award that's given each year to a publicly funded agency in the categories of federal government or government agency, provincial government or government agency, local government or municipality, and law enforcement. Anyone can nominate any agency within these categories, and the award is co-sponsored by the Center of Free Expression, the Canadian Association of Journalists, and Canadian Journalists for Free Expression. Nominations for 2024's Code of Silence winners deadline is December 31st, and I'm speaking to James Turk now about the creation and intent of this award.
I'm Jim Turk. I'm the director of the Center for Free Expression at Toronto Metropolitan University. The Center for Free Expression is for the public primarily, although it's based in a university. It's not university-focused, it's publicly focused. And it grows out of an understanding that democracy is founded on an ongoing public discourse about what's legitimate and what's not legitimate in society. It's a discourse that can never be brought to an end. That is, we elect a government, it is a majority government, it passes laws, we have to obey those laws, but we never lose our right in a genuine democracy to challenge them, to try to get a different government elected, to get them to reverse their views. And so that ongoing public discourse is really the core of democracy. And there are two things that are important for it to be as effective as possible. One is that everyone has a right to participate in it. And secondly, that should be a real right.
The Center for Free Expression also offers advocacy, intervention in court cases, research, public education, whistleblower protection, and they work with provinces to introduce anti-SLAPP legislation, which is strategic lawsuits against public participation. In British Columbia, environmental groups, activists, and journalists are regularly threatened with SLAPP suits for challenging projects such as pipelines, mines, and fish farms. BC's NDP government passed Canada's original anti-SLAPP law in 2001, but after the party was ousted from government later that year, the BC Liberals overturned the legislation. Then in 2019, BC's legislature unanimously passed the Protection of Public Participation Act, which aims to allow journalists to argue that they are speaking out in a matter of public importance and that the harm in allowing a lawsuit to go ahead outweighs the benefits to the public, resulting in the strongest anti-SLAPP legislation in any jurisdiction in the world. So the Center of Free Expression wanted to bring attention to Canada's access to information legislation in a unique way.
We published an article a few years ago that was titled 206 Recommendations for Changing Canada's Access to Information Legislation. And what it was just the recommendations that had come out of innumerable royal commissions, parliamentary committees, individual task forces and so on that have been set up to make recommendations around Canada's access to information legislation, and almost none of them ever implemented. And it was in that context that we decided to draw some public attention to this in a humorous way. So we created this award, the Code of Silence Award, for outstanding achievement in government secrecy.
What has been the effect of giving a publicly funded organization a dubious award? Have you seen change happen because of the Code of Silence Award?
The biggest response we've gotten historically has been the municipality or the municipal agency that's been named the most secretive in Canada that year. And so I've had irate mayors calling me. These awards have become the subject of city council meetings or municipal council meetings. Many of them are very upset, and quite a number of them have engaged in very egregious secretive practices. And one of the impacts has been, at that level, change in the behavior of some of those municipalities and getting away from their overly secretive approaches to things. The nominations almost always come from either journalists or members of the public who've used the access to information legislation to make a request for information that should be available to the public.
Yeah.
Have been refused. Or they get the document and 90% of it is blacked out. Or they are told that, yes, you can have the document, but it's going to cost you $8,000. Or the most egregious case was a request to the RCMP for information about a campaign or an initiative they had run in, I think, from 2010 to 2012. And the response back was, yes, we'll provide it to you, but it's going to take 292,000 days to do it, which is 800 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And that got appealed, and it got reduced to 80 years. Now, I mean, that's ludicrous. This was about a campaign during an era when we actually have digital records. Anyways, so, I mean, that is just beyond the pale. But often people, I was just talking with a journalist now who proudly sent me a request that he and I had put together 7 years ago. It just came. Right. So we look at those kinds of things where there clearly is using the legislation to obstruct a genuine access.
Here's the Narwhal's Northwest BC reporter, Matt Simmons.
I recently got back a couple of requests from the RCMP that I originally filed in March 2022. So that's a 2.5 year wait, which is pretty long, obviously, and well past the legislated deadline. And from what I understand with the RCMP, that's actually pretty decent, which is frustrating to say the least. One of those requests was 100% redacted, so I'm not even sure how many pages were in there, but they did not provide me with any of the records that I requested, so that's also a little bit frustrating. The other one was extremely heavily redacted to the point of being virtually unusable. The RCMP, you know, it's pretty widely known that they're not great at being responsive. They regularly overshoot deadlines and are particularly heavy in their redactions. I had a conversation with an analyst at one point about it, and I was told that some of the redactions that are regularly applied on police files are very discretionary. So I think it's Section 16 of the Federal Act is around disclosure of information that would be harmful to police business, and that's sufficiently vague that it can be applied to, well, we don't actually know because, of course, we don't get those records. But I tried to push back on redactions saying, you know, it's a matter of public interest, which applies under the Act. And I had that conversation that basically said they can use their discretion. So the RCMP can say, well, it is, and we can't tell you why it is harmful to police business. And there's no real recourse. So that's definitely frustration, especially when we're talking about matters of public interest that are occurring in real time.
So which public organizations are easier to work with?
The BC Energy Regulator is surprisingly extremely easy to work with on freedom of information requests, in my experience. They're kind of this standalone department of government, and they kind of have an in-house freedom of information process. So unlike the rest of the BC government, you don't have to pay. The rest of the BC government, you have to pay 10 bucks a pop for a freedom of information request, and sometimes fees on top of that. The BC Energy Regulator is free, and you go directly to them. They're really responsive, and they, from my experience, they don't seem to redact as much information, at least not on the requests that I've been filing with them. So I encourage everyone to go file freedom of information requests with the BC Energy Regulator, and I'll be watching those proactive disclosure sites to see what comes up. I think Canada, both the federal government and provinces and territories, I mean, I speak from my perspective with province of BC, should do a heck of a lot more proactive disclosure. I think the principles of a democratically elected government is it's working for the people. And when there's so much that is not disclosed, there's this lack of transparency, and journalists have to fight tooth and nail to get that information, I think that undermines the public confidence in the process of democracy itself. And that's really problematic.
Proactive discourse in Canada is the practice of releasing information to the public before it's requested. It's a key part of open government and is intended to improve accountability and transparency, as well as encourage more informed public debate.
The more we have distrust of the government, whether it's founded, you know, on actual examples of the government being untrustworthy, or in these cases of lack of transparency and this, you know, struggle to get information that should be publicly available, that seeds distrust. And I think that should be changed.
As journalists, too, we're so often not allowed to, like, make the story, right? We have to document events and reactions to events. But is the Code of Silence Award, is it kind of a way to empower journalists and the public to let them tell the story?
Well, it's a way to let the public know in a concrete way some of the problems with our access to information legislation. But it was just a way of speaking not abstractly about the difficulties of our access to information legislation, but giving really concrete examples of how it's failing. Under the access to information legislation in every province and also federally, there are certain things that are excluded. There are certain agencies. So under the federal legislation, the Canada Blood Services Agency, you cannot ask for information from them. In other words, the way it works in most countries is all federal agencies are included except for those that are specifically excluded. The federal government, but all agencies and boards and commissions of the federal government are only included if they're listed on the legislation. So the default is they're not included. So that's a problem. But we don't give awards based on problems in the legislation. We give awards where someone is to be covered, the information being asked for is not excluded, and they still don't get it.
Here's Amanda again, speaking to what changes she as a journalist would like to see happen moving forward with legislation around FOI requests.
I would really like to see governments dedicating more resources to the freedom of information process. Delays and extensions have just become a matter of course over the last few years. It just feels like an act of frustration for everybody involved. You file a request, you know that you're going to be waiting months, if not years, to get the information that you're looking for. And it feels like increasingly there's a backlog of complaints waiting to be heard around FOI requests. If governments would adequately fund this process on the front end and move these requests through faster, they wouldn't be dealing with a backlog of complaints. And I think it would lead to better transparency and more trust in government all around.
Okay, so what can the public and journalists do that maybe you've learned from this award that makes it easier for them to access public information? Here's James Turk again.
Well, I had a whole bunch of things I used to recommend, but then the Toronto Globe and Mail launched what it calls the Secret Canada Project. The editor-in-chief, David Walmsley, assigned two of his senior reporters, Robin Doolittle and Tom Cardosa, to start reporting in every story they do where it's relevant, issues related to the problems they face in getting information for the story from the federal government or from provincial governments. And then he appointed a number of staff at the Globe to prepare a back end to this project where they would have a database of hundreds of thousands of access to information requests that had been made, because once you've made an access to information request, that information is then publicly available. But they also created a database of all the public agencies in Canada that are covered by access to information legislation. So if you're interested in getting information from a particular agency, BC Hydro or whomever, you can just go into the Secret Canada database on the Globe and Mail website, click on the agency you want. It tells you who the contact person is, their email address, and then they resource for all of us there where you click on it and it actually helps write the letter.
Yeah.
So that's what I recommend to anybody who wanted to file an information request to go there first.
Yeah. What's the feedback that you tend to hear about this award from both people that you work with, but then also when people find out about it, what's typically their reaction?
Well, I wish it were better known across Canada. So we do hear from journalists quite frequently who, in addition to nominating people, also follow the results of it and say, oh, yeah, I had trouble with that municipality as well, or whatever. We hear that sort of thing. I also hear, especially in the municipal category, from outraged mayors or city councilors saying, how dare you name our community? And we say, well, here are the facts. You know, there was a request made to you for this information. You told people they couldn't have it, and you gave them a bogus reason.
Yeah.
And it was really important information for that community to have. But that's outrageous, blah, blah, blah. So we also hear from some of the recipients.
Yeah. James also wanted to encourage journalists and members of the public to stay vigilant with governments and agencies and to submit a nomination form online if you think that you have a good case for a winner of the Code of Silence Award. In order to do that, go to cfe.torontomu.ca, or you can simply just Google Center for Free Expression Code of Silence Award.
So if anyone has sought information from a public body, and in your mind or their mind been inappropriately denied it or delayed in getting it, or what you got had most of the interesting stuff redacted or blacked out, you can nominate that agency very easily by going to the Center for Free Expression website. And there's a link there to the nomination form. It's just a Google form, and you just put the information into that, and it goes into the hopper then.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and explaining this award in detail.
Well, it's very kind of you to be interested. I'm really delighted. And I hope some of your listeners will actually make submissions.
Yeah, I think so too.
I hope others will check out the Globe and Mail Secret Canada site, because it's probably the most exciting thing that's been done to help bring about better access to information legislation in Canada than we've seen in 30 years.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at SkeenaStrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.